I have a little introduction for our guest tonight. Our speaker is David Rombett, teacher, musician, and Wyoming poet laureate. He has published 9 books, including Windmill, Essays from 4 Mile Ranch, Certainty, and Some Church. Professor Rombett earned degrees in American Studies from Reed College and in poetry from the Iowa Writers Workshop. Currently, he teaches creative writing at the University of Wyoming and performs with the fire group, with the musical group, the Fire Ants. The Wyoming Humanities Council presents tonight's program as part of its 2008 Humanities Forum. The Humanities Forum and other council programs explore the human experience, our lives, our communities, our world, in partnership with nonprofit organizations across Wyoming. Emphasis is placed on fostering discussion among Wyoming residents. So please join me in welcoming David Rombett, who will present Accordions, Not Bombs, Culture, Music, and Identity in Basque Country today.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, I made a kind of a little troublemaking thing right in the beginning instead of speaking to be recorded for this. This is the Historical Society, is that right? So that's why you keep records of everything. But I have about 20 ways I would like to start talking with you this evening, and since I'm stuck doing one after the other, just imagine that this talk is really about 9 or 10 beginnings. And one of the beginnings is to say that the Basque Country, how many of you were here when I spoke here before, a couple of years ago, 2-3 years ago, that was more on Wyoming and Basque immigration into this region. Tonight I'm going to try and talk a little more about the Basque Country itself. And there are a number of interesting and unusual things about it for me. One, that it appears to be, it's pretty clear, that it's the oldest continuous European population. That is the oldest European culture in existence. At the same time, one of the smallest countries in Europe, physically, with a small population. It's a place where life is intensely personal. That makes it like Wyoming in some ways, which I find to be also another very personal kind of community and culture. But unlike Wyoming, the Basque Country is physically very, very tiny. So in the Basque Country, there would be a village every 3, 5, 7 miles. And people would talk about going to things by the time it takes them to walk to the next thing. Very different than our lives here, where we were just talking about my 8-hour drive here today to get to this talk. So I want to emphasize that right in the beginning. Second, I brought these books. For anybody who didn't get one of these last time, how many of you did get one of these the last time I was here? Just a couple. So please feel free to take these. These are books that I edited with my mother-in-law, Dolly Iberlin, who's in the Northern Wyoming Basque community. And they kind of are just personal stories of various Basque people in Wyoming. And some of them are very beautiful, a very touching one about the first time a woman went home to the Basque Country as an adult, having been born and raised in the United States. So please, when we're through, feel free to take one of those. I'm going to play you a tune right off the bat, if you don't mind. This, we all know what this is, right? What is this called? Yeah, but it's way different than what you're used to, isn't it? I mean, most accordions, I think, that you'd be used to have a piano keyboard on them, right? They look, they're basically half of a piano. They're usually 44 piano keys. You
know? I just want to come here.
Yeah, come over this way a little bit. And they also, their playing technique is very, very different. The accordion wasn't invented until the 1820s. Remember then that this makes it kind of unusual in the Basque Country, because here's this ancient culture in which an instrument which is so recently invented has become identified very deeply with Basque people, outside the country and inside the Basque Country. There's one tune I want to play for you right in the beginning. It's called Agurra. Sometimes it's just called Agur. Has anybody heard that word? Did we learn that word last time I was here? No? You need to know it if you don't already. Would you all please try?
What's this instrument?
Oh, yeah, sorry. I skipped right over that, didn't I? This is a diatonic button accordion. Diatonic meaning that its scale is only the 7-tone scale that's historical in Western music, but not all 12 notes. You know how on the piano there are the 7 white notes and the 5 black ones in between each octave? And so there are 12 pitches in what's called a chromatic scale. This is not designed to play a chromatic scale, although you can. it's kind of weird and messy. But it wasn't meant to be that way. It was meant to be much more old-fashioned. The first accordions, indeed, didn't play anything but chords. So people would play things like this. And then you can play songs like da 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 da. That's about all you can do. They've gotten more complicated as time went by. This one puts three scales, the diatonic scales. You don't really want a music theory lecture, I bet. But it's a different kind of instrument, very much, than the piano accordion. And as you can see, if you push a button down and you push the bellows in, it plays a pitch. If you hold that same button down and pull the bellows, it's a different pitch. That's completely unlike a piano accordion.
We call it a concertina.
Well, concertinas are actually a different instrument. They're related to accordions. But can you guess what a difference would be between a concertina and an accordion?
The buttons. There wouldn't be that many buttons on it.
Well, it depends. They can have any number of buttons. There are 64-button concertinas and 33-button ones. And anybody, think about the names. Concertina and accordion.
Accordions have the bass keys all tied up in chords.
Yeah, that's right.
All the C's are in one line.
Well,
all the F's are in one line. There's the chord, the counter chord, the minor chord, and the diminished seventh are all in a line.
Sounds accordion like a guy who played the piano accordion once in his life, huh?
Just last night.
Yeah. But the difference is really that there is a chord from one button. In other words, this is a note, right? A single pitch. But if I push down this button next to it, it's actually three notes played at once. So it's like me having to go. Concertinas don't have that. Every button is one note. Accordions, some button plays a chord.
No, but it has to be, if you squeeze it one way, it's one way and one note, and then it's a different note. If you pull it out.
Yep. Concertinas do that too. Actually, the only some of them. But that's another music theory lecture. Okay, so let me play this tune, and we need to learn the word agur. So everybody please try and say that. Agur. 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 Spaniards make fun of Basque people because in Spanish there are two R's. One that's like the R in the word, let's see, mentira. I don't know if anybody knows that word. It means a lie. And if you want to really pick on someone, you go up to them and say, mentirosa, which means you big liar. And so if you say mentira, there's that one little click of the R, mentira. But if you put an R at the beginning of a word, then you, like in the word rose, the flower, instead of rosa, it's rosa, right? Rosa. Basque people roll everything like mad. So agur. And it means hello, but in a very respectful yet friendly way. People would say it in passing. They'd say it as they walk by each other on the street. If they're not going to talk, they'd say it for goodbye. If you're leaving a supermarket or something, the clerk might say agur to you to be friendly, that kind of thing. So here's the tune. Thank you. also to show respect. Like in the Basque Country or in a Wyoming Basque community, you might play agur for a special mass to honor someone in the church. You might play it at a wedding to honor the bride and groom. You might play it at a graduation, an anniversary party. You know, any place that you want to show respect to someone, you could play that tune. It's very commonly heard. Now, I thought, since I've been here before, and since people are coming for a talk about the Basque Country, I wondered if you'd all like to say anything about things you know, or, you know, these humanities talks are meant to be discussions more than lectures. And so I wondered, are there things you have questions about the Basque Country, or things you know?
I've heard that you can't relate the Basque language to any other language on earth. None of the Romance languages, they're not even certain where it originated. Discuss the ethnicity of the language.
Yes, that's good. He's given the proper lecture on the language. That's exactly correct. The language doesn't appear to be related to any spoken language on earth, although people who do studies in historical linguistics claim that there was a large language family that they believe Basque was a member of at one point, and all the other languages in the family are dead. They're not spoken on earth anymore. Basque is the only one. That's part of the reasoning behind the idea that the Basque people are among the oldest peoples on earth, because their language is one of a family that there aren't any of them left. All the other peoples who were in that language family disappeared from our knowledge. So there's that. And it is not related to Romance languages structurally. Though you know that the Basque people have been in contact, or maybe you don't. Does everybody know where the Basque Country is?
Spain.
This is a very controversial point, and remind me if I get too far away to come back to language a little, but we should get on that too. Like, if you look at this map here, this is a map of what's called Euskadi, or Euskal Herria. That's the name of the Basque Country in Basque. Euskadi is a modern politicized name. It was invented by a man named Sabino Arana in the 1890s and early first 10 years of the 20th century. To create Basque identity. There was no name for the Basque Country except the land of Basque speakers, historically. The Spaniards call it El País Vasco, the Basque Country. English speakers call it the Basque Country. It doesn't have a name like France. We don't call France the nation of French-speaking people. You know, it has a name. But the Basque Country never did. So he invented the name Euskadi. But then there was this older name, Euskal Herria, land of Basque speakers. So that's a map right here. And if you look at it, can you tell there's no reference on the map to Spain or France? Can you see that? There's no indication that you're in Spain or France. It's just a map of the Basque countries, of Euskadi. So that's really interesting. They show kind of the bits, the white part down there of Spain.
So where would the Pyrenees Mountains be on that?
Well, can you see where that is? Kind of right here.
Okay.
Pyrenees here and the Cantabrian Mountains across here. Okay. So this is like the French-Spanish border about here. That's not indicated on that map, because this is a map that says we're not French and we're not Spaniards. You buy this map, you've made a political gesture. Does that make sense? Everything turns out to be a political gesture in the Basque Country. As opposed to, look at this map from Michelin. Regional map Spain. Forget it. You can't even tell. The Basque Country's cut in half. Part of it's on this map, but that's not this one, sorry. Let me get the right one for that. It's this one here, where the Basque Country is cut in half because it doesn't exist. So part's on this side of the map, but to see the rest of the Basque Country, you've got to turn around. And then it's cluttered up with being in Spain. This is a map that, what does it say? It says something here. Yeah, Spain. It's interesting, though. You see this word down here? This is like a Basque word. But they don't indicate the Basque Country. This is the Spaniards saying, there's no such thing as the Basque Country. They're Spaniards. Right? That's kind of funny. Then here's this one. I love this one. This one is what's called La Comunidad Autónoma Basca. This is a Spanish map, but of the regional autonomous zone. Are you all aware that Spain is now broken into regional autonomous zones? So, do people know that or not? Maybe I should say a word. You all know who Francisco Franco was, right? And I'll go back a little to talk about Franco some. But Franco, who was the dictator of Spain from 1939 to 75, there was no Basque regional zone. But after Franco's death, the Spaniards had a constitutional convention and wrote a new constitution. That constitution included in their basic covenant the rights of historically known regions to apply for autonomous, I don't know what you'd say, standing within Spain. Sort of like states in the U.S., but more. They have more power than states do. For example, they have the power to determine the language of instruction in the public school, which you couldn't do in an American state. You know, if Wyoming suddenly said, we've decided that all Wyoming public schools will teach in Basque, you know, you'd be in the courts in about 2 minutes and it would be forbidden. Our Constitution doesn't allow states to have that power. But the regional autonomous zones in Spain do. So this is the Basque regional autonomous zone. But I don't know if you notice, if you can tell, it doesn't include the southern end down here, and it doesn't include this bit up here. It's not on it, because that bit's in France. This is a map that has a relationship to Spain, but says we're independent within Spain. This is a map that says you can't separate the northern and southern Basque country and call it two things. Is this too boring for you?
Well, is all of that green Basque country then?
The darker colored part is what has legal standing in Madrid with the Spanish government to be determined to be the Basque Autonomous Region.
So how many regions are there?
Well, there are only a certain number of autonomous regions. There's Catalunya, which is the capital's Barcelona. There's Galicia, which is to the west of the Basque country, and it's Santander. There's the Basque country, and then there's this weird one that's really trouble for Basque people. It's Navarra, Navarre in English, and it's called Nafarroa in Basque. Nafarroa is actually the only historical zone of the Basque country that was ever an independent nation. There was a kingdom of Nafarroa in the 12th and 13th century. That's the only time there's been independence, except for 6 months in 1936. When Franco invaded Spain and the Spanish government, in a fit of terror, granted the Basque country autonomy if they would support the Republic against Franco. And so that's part of why Franco hated the Basque people. So I don't know if you know that about Franco, but he was very, very clear when he made statements throughout his reign that there would be no Basque country when he was there.
Why did he hate them?
Well, one, because the Basque country is the most Catholic region historically in Spain, and Franco saw himself as a defender of the faith. So why should the most faith-based part of Spain, in his mind, oppose him? He was furious about that. He was furious that the most richest economic region of Spain historically has been Catalunya in the east, Barcelona, and the Basque country in the west. People joked that until Franco's death, if you took Barcelona and the Basque country out of Spain, what you had was Zimbabwe. You know, it was a poor third world country. I don't know if you traveled in Spain in the 1950s or 60s. It was a very, very poor country, very un-European in that sense, in terms of development, technology, highways, you know. The material benefits of European life were not in Spain, except in the Basque country. And the richest, biggest city was Bilbao, called Bilbo in Basque. And that was an industrial city, big time industrial. Shipbuilding, ironworking for like 1,500 years now. They're doing ironworking in the 6th and 7th century. Some of you may know, in Shakespeare, there are mentions of Basque swords, because the best swords you could get were made in the Basque country in the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th century, that kind of thing. Bilbao was rich. Franco hated that. Hated that these people who had opposed him, and he was going to destroy that culture. So it was illegal to speak Basque in Spain from 1939 until it started loosening up in the late 60s and 70s. Franco kind of didn't force it as much as he had. But through the 50s and 60s, speaking Basque landed you in prison. It was illegal to teach in Basque. I met, when I was in the Basque country, a man about my age who was in the first illegal Basque language school during the Franco government that Basques had gotten together. Now, you know that Spanish officials must have known about these, right? Because the kids weren't in the Spanish schools. So where were those kids? Somebody surely knew and was kind of turning a blind eye to it rather than reporting them. But he was in the first illegal Ikastola, which was, that's the term for a school, Ikastola, which was started in 1972. That was the first time Basque children could study in their language since 1939. So language is a huge issue in the Basque Country. And I met a young man when I was in the Basque Country in 2005. He was about 28 years old. And like many Basques, he had lived briefly in the U.S. Even today, when there aren't economic reasons, Basque people generally do not need to leave the Basque Country to have a better life economically. It's a very rich region. But there's a big, long historical tie to the U.S., especially the American West, California, Nevada, Wyoming, Eastern Oregon, you all know that. And so many young people still come. They maybe study here a little or work here for a year or two. He had lived in California for 4 years and met an American woman and got married. And then they moved back to the Basque Country. And they speak, in their household, English, French, Spanish, and Basque. Those are the normal languages that Basque people would know, right? Because Basque is their language. French and Spanish are the two ruling nation states over the Basque people. And English is the global international language of business and power and all that right now. So those are very logical for Basque people.
Like Switzerland.
Yes.
People in Switzerland speak German, Swiss, French, and a lot of them speak Italian.
Italian, yeah. Yeah.
Same deal.
It's very different from here. And he was talking to me one day because he was giving me a few little Basque lessons. And he said one day, you know, he was also in training to be a school teacher. He was training to be a public school teacher, and what he was going to teach is Spanish. I love that already, right? He was being trained to be a Spanish teacher in the Basque Country, Spanish as a foreign language. And he said to me, you know, I grew up here, and we all grew up, even those of us who are pretty young, grew up before Basque was very widely used because of the laws against its use and the fear of using it. Old people today still, I can see people, if I see somebody who's in their 70s or 80s, on the street in the Basque Country, you can watch them watching young people speak Basque with, I don't know what, a combination of befuddlement, awe, glee, terror, you know, all kinds of feelings. Because for so long, they lived most of their lives where it was illegal to speak, and nobody would speak on the street. You only spoke Basque at home, privately, where nobody could hear you from the Spanish government. Right? But he said to me, I grew up speaking Spanish and Basque, and I believe that my Spanish and Basque are just about equally good. I can do about as well in either language. You know, most of us feel no matter how much we know a second, third language, it's not as good as our native tongue. But he said, it doesn't matter to me. And yet, he said, sometimes I think it's so exhausting speaking Basque because nobody wants us to. Even today, the Spanish government wishes we'd all stop. You know, they do everything in their power, like they've instituted massive immigration programs to encourage Spaniards to settle in the Basque Country and bring Spanish with them to try to encourage Spanish as the primary language. And he said, and then I'll have that feeling like, why do I speak Basque? Nobody cares. There are a million speakers of Basque on the whole planet. So why don't I just speak Spanish? There are 400 million Spanish speakers on the planet. It's like the second largest or third largest language spoken on Earth. And he said, and then every once in a while it'll hit me in the head that my language is the oldest language in Europe. And if I don't speak it, it's almost as though I'm denying a major part of human heritage. So to speak Basque becomes an act of commitment to history. Isn't that a kind of a wild idea? Not something most of us would think of, I guess. Because I bet we think of English, if we ever think of it at all, as just what we talk. And you don't think every time I speak English, I'm making a gesture towards some philosophy or value system. I don't know. Do you feel that way?
French is getting that way.
Oh, yeah, because the French were the English of 150 years ago.
I mean, in France, you can die before you can get to the bathroom because they won't tell you, they won't tell you where it is unless you ask in French.
This is an American problem, isn't it? There's some problem with Americans and French people over language. And that's a different lecture. But, yes, sir?
Quebec is kind of the same way with their French, too.
Yeah, there's huge issue about French and English in Canada. And you all know that Belgium has been falling apart for the last year. Do you follow that in the news ever?
We don't do any government politics.
Well, Belgium hasn't had a government, like, for 8 months because they couldn't form a government over language and culture issues. So instead, they ran the country for, like, 6 months with no government. And Belgian friends I know have said to me, it seemed to work great. It was no problem. Everything just kept going. All the people went to work, but there was no official government because they couldn't form. You know how elections work in parliamentary systems. You elect the party. There is no. It's like we vote for a president, but they don't do it that way. They vote for the party, and there's a party leader who then becomes the prime minister. But in most European systems, and the Basque countries like this, there's six major political parties in the Basque country. There has never been, since Basque autonomy in 1980, that's how long they've had autonomy, there's never been a majority government. No government has ever been formed which received a majority of the vote. It's very hard to get the majority of the vote when there's six major parties and three or four or eight little tiny splinter parties, too. You know, so language can be a big, big deal. Matt, what you want to...
Where's the vast towns in Wyoming?
Well, the historical Basque communities in Wyoming were two big immigration waves, one to northeastern Wyoming, largely Johnson County. And that came between 1902 and 1920, the biggest waves of it. And if you were here last time, you would know that. I mentioned that that was the largest wool growing industry on the planet between about 1910 and 1930. If Johnson County had been a nation, it would have been the largest wool-producing nation on Earth at that time. Now that's gone. The second wave of immigration was to southwestern Wyoming. And you all know there are Bass, there's still Bass ranches. One of the largest ranches left in North America with sheep is the Arambell Ranch that runs almost down to Rock Springs and all the way up above Pinedale. All
there
down
there
that
was
face.
Lots, and they referred to them as French Bass sheep. Herd.
Yes, the...
I was originally from Cokeville, and that was, you know, a big sheep industry in the early days, and there got to be quite a lot of, well, ranchers, Echeverries was Bass.
Yeah, those are common names. All the Eche, if you see Eche, that's a common Bass name because Eche in Bass means house.
It's Caracaboos.
Caracaboo. Yeah,
Caracaboo. There's still there some of those. There was a Caracaboo guy there at
Geneva,
yeah.
And they won't change their name. They won't change their name when they hit Ellis Island like the rest of our ancestors.
Actually, many Bass names were changed too. You know, well, I mean, but there are no records to know about how many Bass actually came here because it wasn't a nation, right? So if you're looking up, if you want to figure out who's Basque in America, how many Bass ever immigrate, you got to look through all the French and Spanish and Argentine and Chilean records because that's where people often came from, and then fix the Basque names. But you don't even know then. For example, in Mexico, there are millions of people named Ibarra. Ibarra is a really common Basque name. But lots of the people in Mexico don't even know their families had Basque heritage. It's like many Americans couldn't tell you where their families were five generations ago. Or, you know. So yeah, it's hard to tell from names.
Most all of them, if they come out here to work, why, they saved their money, and usually all of them were real successful.
You know,
they go into different businesses.
Yeah. Here it was mostly sheep ranching. In California, there were a lot of Bass went into shopkeeping,
restaurants,
and gardening. Landscape gardening is a big, big deal, like in the San Francisco Bay Area.
We was in Bakersfield, California, and we used to have a hunting operation, and we had some hunters from Buttonwillow, which was a cotton community just out. And this one said, well, I want to take over this Bass restaurant. When I got over there, why, he said, I knew you in Cokeville. And I didn't ever remember seeing the guy, but he heard his sheep there.
Yeah.
And then saved his money, and he wound up. And then this guy that took us there kind of helped finance him. And he had quite a supper club and a bar. And
nice.
Quite a nice, yeah. Nice. Yeah.
All right, well, let me play you this other tune. Is that okay if we have tunes periodically?
Yeah. Yes, we love it.
And this one is called Ashuribatsa, which means black sheep. And it's a very, very common dance tune. Much of Basque music, again, is meant to represent being Basque. That's a lot of what I'm talking about tonight, is how people represent being Basque. And if any of you comes from a very small minority group ethnic community, you'll know what this is all about, where how important it becomes to people to always be reminding themselves and others who they are, because they're little communities. So Ashuribatsa and a lot of other dances describe this. Let me just play it and then we'll talk about it.
Thank you.
language. And the lyrics roughly are, the black sheep is really beautiful, but the white sheep is even more beautiful. And if you'd like to learn to dance, you better watch my feet. That's verse one. The second verse, that's a great verse, right? Very meaningful. And the second verse is, if you feel the fire inside you to dance, and you're only showing part of your body, why don't you show it all? Which is sort of meant to not mean actually strip as much as dance fully. You know what I mean? It's not a great translation, but you ought to show it all. And then the last one is, when you are captured by that fire, go with it. So it's really a dance tune. And what's funny is, Ashuri Belse is traditionally a widow's dance. You can tell the first part, the slow, kind of mournful sounding by European sensibilities, the la da 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 da. That one. Pardon me?
I just said, let's dance.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's the widows come in, and they're dressed all in black. It's all women doing it, and they have a hat, and their hair's tied tight in a bun, and they have black chunk heel shoes on, and they walk with hands in front and back of each other, and they have this kind of chomp, chomp, do, 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 chomp, dee, dee, do, chomp. You know, like that. It's a very stately, processional thing. But then, of course, the other part of the dance, Yashuri Batana, do fine, and that's this very jaunty thing. And the dance has got all these motions. One is women holding these baskets up. There are a lot of fish. You know, the Basque Country is on the coast, and fishing is a major part of the history of the Basque Country. And so they'd be carrying baskets with fish, and so the dancing would be going on while carrying these. There are parts of it where often there's a gesture of going into the center of a circle and coming out like this. So this is a fishing thing, too. And there's a part of that dance where the women are, you know, cutting hay. They're doing this kind of gesture while they're dancing, too. So I've always been amazed by the dance as a widow's dance because it's so jaunty in the second work part. And I've always thought, okay, what's the real meaning of that? I've made up my own meaning. Since Basque people just do this to show, they've often said that because fishing was such a major part of Basque life for so long, and fishermen went out as early, we believe, as the 6th century, whaling. And by the 10th, 11th, 12th century, by the time of the Vikings on the Grand Banks in Canada and the northeastern U.S., there were Basque people there, it is believed, cod fishing. The evidence for that is just that Basque people were selling various sea products, whale and cod, in France and Spain, but nobody knew where they were getting them. So there's no real, like the Basque people didn't land and build villages. But because they were selling this fish that came from these places, people assumed they must have gotten there. But they were gone for a long time, often. And when they were gone, Basque women ran everything, right? As opposed to, like we think about older European culture being very patriarchal. Women had babies, raised children, and kind of did what they were told. And then, because also we've got the long history in Christianity, which we still have a little bit remnant of this. Every once in a while, you may meet some old-fashioned male who says a woman's job is to obey her husband. So we have that in our cultural history, too. But Basque women, just a minute, Basque women did everything because the men were gone. It's kind of like World War II in America and the whole Rosie the Riveter phenomenon. But what's fascinating to me is when I hear that song and see them doing that work, I don't think they're all that upset. I think they're kind of delighted to have the old boys gone. Because the dance is so jaunty. That's my take. What did you want to ask?
In the 700s and 800s, did the Vikings raise hell with the Basque like they did the English and the French? And they even got over into Constantinople.
There is evidence, yes, of course, that Vikings passed the Basque Country. There is evidence that Celtic peoples invaded what's now the Basque Country like 4,000 years before Christ's time. So there's that long history. But there's an argument as to whether the people living there were culturally Basque or not yet. In other words, when do Basque people become Basque, right? When is an American an American? We're still in the process of inventing a culture.
Yeah, but so their language is older than that.
The language is very old, that's right. But people argue. Well, this is good. This is a good point because Basque people tend to argue a lot. And, for example, they have a phrase, Suspiat Bat. Suspiat Bat means the seven are one. There are seven Basque provinces. But there's an argument today as to whether the seven are one. For example, is Nafarroa a separate entity now that shouldn't be? It's not in the Basque Autonomous Region. It considers itself different. people believe that Nafada was the national, the homeland, the historic homeland of the Basque language, and maybe these coastal peoples right up here weren't speaking Basque in the 8th century. They were down here speaking Basque. You know, it's really unclear, all that kind of goof. And if you're at all interested, there are three books that I think are great. This is the oldest one, Americanuak, published first in the 1970s, about American Basque immigrants. And this one, The Basque History of the World, published in the 90s, which I think is a really good general English language intro. And then this brand new one, The Basque Country, A Cultural History. This is a beautiful building. I don't know if you can all see that, but that's a winery in the southern Basque Country, kind of down in this region, the Basque Country, where maybe you know that the wines of Rioja, maybe you've heard it. Is anybody a wine fan? And we have a big wine taster. Anyway, this is a very interesting book, but he is incessantly unable to say anything for certain. Every time he shows some evidence of something historically, he'll say, well, on the other hand, maybe not. Well, I tend to go with what I think the thinking you're saying. These people were Basque. It is clear.
I heard once that there was a little culture in northern India that some felt had the basic group language that the Basque had. But that was argumentative, too.
Yeah, well, you know, it's not... The European languages are largely Indo-European,
yeah.
So they have roots in India. But Basque is not Indo-European.
Yes.
When I was a kid, they thought it was Finno-Ugric, in the same family with Hungarian. It's clear that was like... They stuck it there because these are all the languages they didn't know what to
do. Most people decided they can't decide where it came from.
Yeah, that's right. Most people just say, we don't know. We don't know where this language came from. But there's a great joke. So there was an English writer named Rodney Gallup who lived in the Basque Country in the 1930s, wrote beautiful things, and he's the one who first said the Basque people are the people who dance at the base of the Pyrenees. And many Basque people hate that because it's a romanticization of them. You know what I mean? They're a great deal more than a colorful dance community. And they don't see themselves as the mystery people of Europe either, which they're often called, the mystery people of Europe. They're just Basque people, like any other people. They have a history and a culture and a language and all that. But they don't see themselves as, oh.
These people basically intermarry in their country, are they mixed with European
languages? Yes, yes, because they are Proto-European, right? I mean, if they're the earliest Europeans, then they have to be mixed with other Europeans. My father-in-law's family name is Iberlin. And I asked him once about his Basque family and its history, and he says, oh, well, to tell you the truth, we're not really Basque. And I said, really? He said, yes, Iberlands are immigrants to the Basque Country. I said, oh, I didn't know that. He said, yes, from Alsace-Lorraine, you know, a part that's an area that's been disputed between France and Germany.
Yeah. 32 times.
And he said, we're actually from Alsace-Lorraine. I said, really? Well, when did your family move to the Basque Country? 800 years ago. You know, so, okay, you're not Basque. 800 years ago. But there has been mixing. But at the same time, there are evidence, one of the reasons that people who study cultural communities think the Basque people should be identified as unique in some way has to do with the kind of things you're asking. They have a preponderance of one blood type. I can't remember which one now. But it's way higher than any other European community. In other words, you know, you think like 33% are O and 24% are B and A, B and all that. The Basque people are on one blood type. That means less intermixing, right? Because they, and they're also 27% Rh negative.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That also means no mixing. And historically, of course, what else would that mean to a community?
You better have a lot of Rogan on hand.
Yes, and when it's the year 1213 and there isn't any, what does it mean? A lot of what?
Yes.
A lot of miscarriages. It is like the world's most powerful birth control method. And if you live in a tiny, tiny geographic area and your population can't go up, suddenly massive Rh negative is a protection device. It's weird, right? But even given that, the Basque population grew so much between like the 13th and 19th centuries that Basque people couldn't make a living there till recently. So that's why there's so many in Wyoming and the West in general. They were poverty stricken. There are villages in the Basque Country in the northern Basque Country is called Iparralde. in Basque. Aldea means village, town, community. Iparralde means northern community. Egoalde, that's the autonomous zone in Spain, means southern Basque country. Egoalde and Iparralde. And there are villages in Iparralde where as many as 80% of the young men between the ages of 16 and 21 left the country in periods of 1 or 2 years in the late 19th century. There are villages that were entirely depopulated because they were so poverty-stricken. And for a long, long time, Basque people said, you know, you have three children. The first one takes over the farm. They were historically farmers or fishermen, and they had the system where they didn't split things up. Whoever's firstborn gets it all. The others hustle. And that was also a way to preserve the culture, because if you split the farm up every time it's inherited, and it's a tiny little country, pretty soon your farms are about the size of this room.
That sounds like Stuart Brown's speech.
Really?
Remember that speech?
What did he say?
Many years ago, Stuart Brown said the worst thing a farmer in Star Valley can do divide his farm
right
up
here
into three, leave it to one, and let the other two go out and make a decent living, instead of leaving it to three and it's too small for him.
Well, the Basque country, that was kind of the cultural rule.
He gave that speech at commencement.
That's a good one. All you high school kids, remember, you're not getting the farm.
Anybody hear that speech that Stuart Brown gave?
So anyway, they did that too.
So did a lot of them immigrate to America?
Yes, and a lot of them became maritime people. You may know that the first person to circumnavigate the globe was Basque. It was with Magellan's first trip, but he died. And it was Juan de Oñate who made it home. They started with like 400 guys and 23 got home around the earth. And so the second one was often a maritime person. The third one often became a priest after. I often wonder if that's why Catholicism finally took. Because the Basque people resisted the introduction of Christianity for about 1,000 years. You know, the first Christian communities were in there with when the Roman Empire became Christianized, because the Romans had outposts in the Basque country. But the Basque people actually remained, they had a historic religion, they have a character name. It's very interesting because it fits Catholicism. They had a character named Mari. And so Mary works great, because Mari was a female goddess of nature in the mountains in traditional Basque religion. And so they can just kind of stick it together with the introduction of the Catholic faith. Well, at that time, it wasn't Catholic, it was just Christian, you know. So that's been an interesting thing. But the farm, the sea, and the church have been really the traditional things for families.
Can you give us an idea of how big that is compared to Wyoming?
Yeah, let's see. It's about, I lived right here in Donostia, which in Spanish is called San Sebastian. And let's see, it was about over to, where is Bilbao? Can you see Bilbao? Yeah, there it is. See Bilbao? It's Donostia. They're kind of almost on opposite ends of the Basque Country. That's probably, 100 miles.
Oh, my God. So it's small.
It's small. It's small. It's a small country.
Well, how come they never got any patriotic enough to establish a country?
You know what? If you can answer that, sister, you're going to be an important Basque scholar. Nobody can answer that. Why didn't? Well, there are a number of reasons people can guess about it. One, their languages were so isolated physically from each other that Basque people historically couldn't understand each other's dialects very well. They identified very strongly with their small place. This is a very mountainous region. All of this, there's a mountain range across here dividing the sea coastal area from the inland, more desert area. It was very physically hard to move around, so people tend to focus on their community. Two, they were different from other Europeans. As soon as the Roman Empire came into being, they're very unlike. They didn't speak a Romance language, they didn't take on the Roman language, the Roman ways. The Romans had right here, in Irunia. This was the Roman garrison. That's in, you can't see it, I'm just lying on the thing. Down here, this town, Pamplona, it's called. I bet you all know that because of the running of the bulls in Spain, right? Pamplona is the capital of Nafarroa, the biggest Basque province, and the one that's the least culturally Basque now. The Romans had a big garrison there, but they didn't come in here. For some reason, they didn't try to rule it administratively, and they didn't tax it. And the Spanish government didn't tax this either. There's a river here, the Ebro, which divides Spain from the Basque country, a lot of it. And there was no customs duty until you crossed that river historically through the whole period of the Spanish Empire. This was a duty-free zone. That's why it got so rich.
Is it country?
Well, it's a bit, mountains here, but it's sea level, and then up to like 5,000 feet at the peaks. So, but they didn't get that sense of we got to be separate, form a nation, only until the 20th century. This flag, this is the Basque flag. Here's the oldest people in Europe. This flag was invented in about 1892. First time in history there'd been a Basque flag. And that's the oddest idea, that there'd never been a Basque flag before that. So, I don't know if there's a really good answer to why they didn't develop it. And there's still many people in the Basque country who resist the idea. They want to be the Basque people, and not necessarily still a nation. They argue amongst themselves, should we be independent or not? That's a huge argument, independence or not. Yes?
Probably the reason they didn't take that coastal area is because of the mountain range, it wasn't worth it to them. There are only a few people.
Yeah, it's hard to know.
A few people, and difficult to get in there.
It's also interesting that, of course, the Roman Empire was in here. You all know what happened when the Roman Empire kind of crumbled and went to pieces. Who ruled Spain? Everybody familiar with that part of Spanish history?
Tell us.
Tell you?
We forgot.
Muslims. Was an Islamic caliphate.
Oh.
From the year about 700 until what's called in Spanish the Reconquista. That's when Ferdinand and Isabel booted the last Islamic governments in 1492. And what else happened in 1492? That's when she gave Columbus the money to go to America. That's when she ejected all Jews from Spain. It became illegal to be a Jew in Spain. Ejected gypsies from Spain and Basque people from Spain. Everybody got ejected at that time.
You know, we in Wyoming, unless you've traveled in Europe, we have a funny sense of distance. In Europe, you can go through five countries in one day real easy. Germany is essentially the size of Montana. France is the size of Texas. And you go over there and go through five countries on the Autobahn in one day without any problem. Whereas it took him a whole day to come across Wyoming.
In a very fast car, too,
yeah.
With good roads. So this is a Basque accordion. I thought, because we don't want to keep you here for the rest of your lives, but I'd like you to hear what this sounds like. This accordion is a general European instrument.
It's a honer.
But there aren't honer reeds in it. It's handmade Italian reeds in it. It's a honer box. This is a Basque accordion, also made in Italy, but made only for the Basque market because it's set up differently than any of the other accordions. I told you how this one's push-pull, you know, you get that kind of thing. But this hand isn't. So it's weird. This hand is push-pull and this hand isn't. This is the only accordion setup I know like that. So let me just play one of these. Fandangos are a very popular dance form in the Basque Country. Thank you. rhythmically a very different kind of tune. They all have little names for the dances that go with them.
Let's see, anything else you want to ask right now? I was going to play one more, but yes, ma'am?
Yeah, wait, who taught you how to do that? How to
play those? Well, you just kind of teach yourself, mostly, in these traditions. They're oral traditions. The Basque Country is all oral. Though now, this is something I haven't mentioned yet. I should say, thank you for the question. Playing this particular kind of accordion is another act of Basque identity now. When this instrument was first invented in the 19th century, so remember it's a brand new instrument, it was only invented in the 19th century, and it came to the Basque Country with Italian railroad workers and with other European peoples. And when it first came, it was highly resisted because it wasn't traditional. It wasn't Basque. They invented this thing, which nobody else plays but the Basque one. It's an accordion, but it's set up differently. It's got a different sound. Now it's a real identifier. It's got a name. It's called triquitisha, this instrument, because the sound of it is triquitisha, 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 taka, taka, taka. So they named it for that onomatopoetic word. And when you play it, it's like saying you're Basque, and there are teachers everywhere now teaching kids to play these things. And there are competitions. You got on the street, there are parades, there are festivals, there are fairs. There's 55 people standing on a plaza playing these simultaneously to say we're Basque. You know, yes, sir.
Are there major differences between the Spanish and French Basque?
Yeah.
Are they pretty homogeneous?
No. My father-in-law always says Spanish Basques know how to fight and French Basques know how to love. That's a parody, but it has roots in historical facts, and that is, for example, during the Franco dictatorship. In 1959, an organization was created called ETA. You may have heard this name. It stands for Euskadita Askatasuna, which means land and liberty, Basque homeland and liberty. It's a revolutionary resistance independence group called by the Spanish government a terrorist group. This is very controversial in the Basque Country, too. Pretty much every Basque family has got somebody in the family who's been in ETA at some point in the last 40 years, you know. But what happened is when ETA was formed and outlawed immediately by the Spanish government because it was lobbying for independence, the ETA operatives would hide in France, and the French government refused to extradite them to Spain because it was a fascist dictatorship, right? It was like it was the only one that survived World War II. Germany was defeated, Italy was defeated, and Franco somehow survived because he was neutral in the war,
yeah.
Right? Officially, neutral. Spain was neutral. So the French would refuse to extradite those Spanish Basques. And that meant that France became the place where nothing bad happened. Like, no Spanish Basque would blow up a power station in France because you were resisting in Spain. So all these things we've read about over the last 40 years of various kinds of violent acts on behalf of Basque independence, they've all occurred in Spain, not in France. And those differences have meant something. Then plus, just culturally, the isolation caused by the Pyrenees Mountains and the fact that your other language, your second language is French, not Spanish, and your second culture is French, not Spanish. French and Spanish side Basque people actually do behave differently often. And their language even sounds different. For example, let's see, what's a word like Chayaldi? Chayaldi is the name of a party. Chayalai, chay means festival, party. So the game, you all know the game Chayalai? The kind of handball game, if anybody ever wants to go to. It's on TV even now sometimes, but in Miami, it's a big time gambling event. Anyway, Chayalai is from that, but chay is with a jota in Spanish, but it's pronounced Yayalai or Jayalai on the northern side, because they don't pronounce that jota sound the same in French. So that's influenced the Basque language. And there are little things like that. But I think people do see themselves quite differently.
Was there a division when the Basques came to this country, or say more Spanish?
Yes, absolutely.
Basque in California?
If you look at maps, there are maps in this book, if you ever get a hold of this one, that have little, you know, hash marks or diagonal lines or dots that show which Basque province the Basque immigrants are from in the U.S. So in Wyoming, the northern group, northeastern, is all from the northern part of the Basque Country, almost entirely. And the part down in the Rock Springs area was almost entirely from the Spanish side of the border in the Basque Country. So those two are very good representatives of how, yes, people would tend to come together. And like, in the Johnson County community, basically there are three villages that everybody came from, the same three villages. And they came because, you know, somebody come and say, hey, there's good work here, and tell Brother Bob to come over and tell your cousin to come, and, you know, that kind of thing. Can I play you one more?
Sure.
You want to ask a question?
Most of the fast people that I have observed have darker skin.
Yes.
Dark skin?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's fairly common. There are different Basque looks, but that's a very common one. The one that looks kind of Mediterranean, olive skin, black hair, dark eyes. Yeah, that's a real common look. But there's also a more kind of square-jawed, rugged, lighter-skinned coal miner look that's also Basque. Just like in Scandinavia, there's the kind of big-jawed Swede look, and there's the tall, skinny look, too, and they're all Scandinavian. So I think there are a couple of looks, but that's definitely one of them.
You don't have dark skin.
I'm not Basque. I'm married into a Basque family.
Okay.
My family actually is Norwegian.
Okay.
I'm married into a Basque family, yeah. Okay, we're going to play the Saspiak Bat tune. So if you wouldn't mind, I'll teach you to count to seven in Basque, okay? Are you ready? Here we go. Bat. Bat. Everybody say that. Bat. B. 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 Iru.
Iru.
Lao.
Lao.
Bosch.
Bosch.
She.
She.
That's the only one that sounds sort of like a Latin word, right? Like ses and cis. She.
She.
And saspi.
Saspi.
Got it? Anybody want to take the test?
No.
Nobody? Really? I bet somebody could remember those. Bat B. What's the next one? Bat B. Yeah, it was. Anybody? Ba, B, Iru. 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 Yeah. Next? Lao.
Lao.
Bosch.
Bosch.
She. Sasti. Okay, we'll do this little dance. So you can call these out, you can call them with me. There's a part where this little thing happens that goes kind of like that, and you get to say, BAT! And the next time it happens, you get to say, BAT B! So. Thank you. Well, I forgot to show you this. Excuse me, but I should show you this because this is part of... Yes.
That sure beats the heck out of rap music.
All right. This, anybody ever seen this before? This kind of instrument is called a shistu in Basque. It's a three-hole flute. There are flutes that have been seen like this in various places around the world, but mostly more recently. This is one of the markers for what people think of as the age of Basque culture, because there has been a flute that looks essentially exactly like this, except this one is made of wood. And the one that was found and preserved is a 27,000-year-old one found, and it's bird bone. But it's the same structure with the same kind of procedure here. You know, there are different kinds of flutes. It's got this called a fipple. It's got a ring, three holes, and it sound, you know. That kind of tune. Very different from the accordion. That's the old instrument. And of course, flutes are the oldest, using flutes and drums, the oldest things in almost all music cultures. So let's see. We've taken a lot of your time. It's past 8 already. Do you have any other questions?
I would like you to demonstrate their dance step.
Oh, which dance step do you mean?
There, you know, let's see. When they do all that fun music.
Well, if you were to do a fandango, the first thing, in Basque country, your hands would be up in the air the whole time. And there's a step that's kind of like this, and like this, and there's a step like this, this back and forth, where you tap the back of your heel as you're going up and down. So Basque dancing is all traditionally kind of on your toes, this way. In Catalunya, the same fandangos are done, people actually kind of, you know, move their arms around, but in the Basque country, it's always the arms up above you the whole time. And that's very common for the fandangos, and then for some of these others, like the Ashuri belts I showed, they would have a kind of, there's a kind of a skipping step, you know, like this. Like, yes, that's right, only it's moving forward instead of sideways, as it might be in, like, popular dancing in the U.S. This, let's just show this. If you're careful with this. This is also one of the oldest of the Basque instruments, known in the Basque country as a dulzaina. It's a double-reeded instrument. They're among the oldest. They did not come to the U.S., I think, because of this, the fiber to make reeds, right? Let's see if we can get some sound out of the reed.
What are the reeds made of?
Oh, there are various plants in the Basque country, but there's nothing quite like it to make one out of in Wyoming or Nevada, or, you know. Plus, they're fragile. You break these reeds and you're done, you know. So. Kind of scary, isn't it?
The sheep.
That's before electricity.
Yeah.
That's actually why these, and this one too, you notice this one's louder than that one? Mm-hmm. Even though this is a fairly recent invention, it's still pre-electricity, so it's got to be loud for public events. It's really important to be heard.
It's got a better tune than, a better tone than the other one too.
Oh, I actually like this one better, but this is good too. But I think that's just taste, you know, and what you're used to, what you like to sound. This is what in music is called wet tuning, because it, when you play a single pitch on it, you can hear it kind of goes wah, 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 wah. The two reeds are tuned a little out of tune from each other. It's why people outside of accordion traditions make fun of accordions. They consider them out of tune. But they do that because when you tune two reeds a little out of tune so that they go wah, 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 they seem much louder. This is a cleaner sound. Not as much wah, 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 wah. It won't be as loud. It's a much gentler sound than this vibrating thing. Let's see, what else shall I tell you? Is there a last thing or is there another question? Yes.
What about the food? Tell us what
about the food. Oh, food in the Basque country. Very different than in the Americas, because when people came to North America, that is, they largely came to the interior west, the mountains, the Great Basin, where there's not very much squid, and not very much octopus, and not very much eel. But the traditional Basque cuisine is largely drawn from the sea, right? And incredible fish. If you get to go to the Basque country, ever, and it's a huge tourist place now, like a place that Americans go a lot now is Bilbao to see the Guggenheim. You all know that famous building that was built?
It's a museum.
It's an amazing building, and it's really transformed Bilbao from a kind of a gritty, broken-down industrial dump into a highly beloved city and a very elegant place. There's been so much development because of the Guggenheim. But the food comes from that whole history. So there are lots of incredible stews, seafood stews. There are lots of pasta dishes with seafood in them. And I was going to say, if you go, the city I mentioned where I live, Donostia, San Sebastian, has more four-star Michelin restaurants than any city on earth. And it's a city of about 200,000, which, you know, that's a lot of good restaurants. So go there. And in little bars, every little bar, a classic Basque habit, a Basque, what would you say, pattern of socializing, is to go to these little kind of bar restaurants. And you get a little tiny glass of this slightly effervescent, mild, kind of slightly dry white wine. And people will drink about that much of it in a glass, like maybe a swallow, two swallows, three swallows at most, while eating what's called a pinchoac, or pinchoac is the plural. And in Spanish it's called, oh, you know what they are, the little snacks. What do they call them in Spanish? Tapas. They're called tapas in Spanish. They're called pinchoac in Basque. It's the same thing. And they're like every kind of little tiny, delightful appetizer food. Has anybody ever been to a little tapas bar? They're popular in Spanish cuisine, too. Anyway, go. And then, when they've done that, they chat for a few minutes, and then they go on to the next bar. And they have one more swallow of white wine, and another pizza. And then they go to the third one. And they'll do this for a long, long time. I think it's possible to get drunk, but I'm not sure it happens much because you spend so much time walking. It's very hard. You never get, I don't know. Are you all big drunks here? Anyway, the food is tremendous. Seafood's a big part of it. There is a whole tradition, though, of the interior farms. The Basque Country is often split into, they say, two kinds of people. Basheriak and Kaleak, which means people of the country and people of the city. Basheri literally means a farm, and Kale means the street. So Kaleak are city people. And city and country people, that's a big division in the Basque Country. Country people in the inland, they made incredible cheeses. Cheese has been a big part, of course, almost all European history, where you have lots of grass and lots of rain. You could have goats and sheep and cows. But cheese was a big thing. And actually, certain kinds of, you know, mutton, rabbit, those animals to eat too. But it's not quite as famous as the seafood parts, which are more exotic and, you know. In the U.S., though, the big deal is garlic, blue cheese, lamb, you know, garbanzo beans in tomato sauce. Those are like real traditional fast foods in this country.
What about fruits and vegetables?
Forget it. We don't eat that stuff. No, no, they do. They do.
But do they raise like cabbage and?
Yes, all those things. And the big fruit is apples. And there's still a tradition of making a sparkling apple wine called Shadargoa, and that is often drunk at the apple harvest. It's not a year-round kind of thing historically, and it replaced beer and wine for people because it was hard cider, right? Now it's like to drink that says, I stand for being Basque. I don't drink that damn beer. I drink apple cider, right? Because it's Basque, traditional historical Basque, to make apple hard cider. So, yes.
I've got a neighbor. He lives in Geneva in Rock Springs. He's a sheep man. But he has two children, a boy and a girl. And the boy graduated from Gonzaga, but then he went over to back over there. And they said the only way you can get into that, and got his master's degree. The only way you get in that university is prove your Basque heritage.
Do you know where he went? There are a lot of universities in the Basque Country. There's the big public one, the University of the Basque Country.
And the daughter, anyway, she went back over and got her master's there.
There's a Catholic one that's very big, Deusto. Deusto is a famous Catholic university.
He teaches in, or works in Bilbao now.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
He works for a big shipping company.
Yeah.
But the dad came from over there.
Right.
He speaks the four languages.
Very common. Well, the Basque Country has slowly been recuperating, is the word they use in French and Spanish, regaining the use of Basque. When Franco died, It was the lowest Basque language use in the history of the Basque Country. And now it's gotten up to about 40% of the population of the Basque Country uses Basque as their first language. That's unlike the other autonomous zones where it's in the high 90s. Catalonia is 99% bilingual. Galicia is 93% bilingual. The Basque Country is only about 40% bilingual. And that's because Basque isn't Romance. So if you know Spanish, to learn Basque, you start over. You may as well be learning Chinese. If you know Spanish and you're trying to learn Catalan, they're very close. So it's not such an effort. But it would be harder now because the language of instruction is often Basque. So if you entered the university without Basque, it'd be hard. You know, although a lot of programs are still done in Spanish and French. Yeah.
I think you told us last time that they, some technical thing that they make a real good living at, but I forgot what you said.
Well, it is a very high-tech zone now. It's like Silicon Valley type place. It's a very computer technology zone for Europe. And the Basque people voted overwhelmingly in favor of the European Constitution. Do you remember this vote? Two springs ago, there was a proposal to have a European Constitution to unify the entire continent, much the way the U.S. is. So there would be a United States of Europe kind of thing. Not like here, though, because they would still remain independent countries. But they'd be linked through a lot of things, which they already are. Like now with the euro, so the currency has become unified. There's no control of borders like in the old days. There are no work permits anymore. If you're English and you want to work in Italy, that's not a problem. You don't have to get a work permit. Everybody in the EU, it's all the same now. And the Basque people saw that as a very smart way to avoid the problem of independence. Just if we had a European Union, and there was a European government in Brussels, it would be as important as the Spanish government in Madrid. So we could run our lives even more freely without having to have a war over getting independent. Like, nobody wants Spain to turn out to be Yugoslavia, right? And end up with Bosnia-Herzegovina, you know, all that mess. And that's what some people fear in Spain because of the autonomous zones and the bitter history. You know, I haven't really talked about that, but just in recent history, the bombing of Guernica by the Nazis in 1937, that was the first bombing of a civilian population with no military target. And in a community of approximately 7,000, about 2,000 died, and the Spanish government denied they bombed it. You know the famous painting by Picasso, it's called Guernica, the one that's black and white, and it's got the figures of like the bulls and the horses looking tortured, and their eyeballs are popping out of their heads. It's a very famous painting. The Spanish government won't let it come back to the Basque Country. It's in Madrid. They won't give it to the Bilbao Guggenheim because they're afraid it's too much, too symbolic and inflammatory because of the history of bombing Guernica. That kind of stuff.
What about the Italian bombing Ethiopia and Haile Selassie? Was that bombing of non-military targets, 1937?
You know, I don't know the exact date of that. I'm not familiar with that. But I know that generally, the historical record, they always put in that bombing of Guernica, which was April 37, was the first daylight non-military saturation
probably
bombing.
Probably about the same time.
So, yeah, if they're very close in time, maybe it's not really crucial which one was first. They're both horrifying events, and they both have shaped you.
Well, they threw their spears at the dive bomber.
That's a great idea, isn't it? Yes.
Well, the bombings that were great here a few years ago, was the Basque bombing there?
No, you remember that was something that caused a lot of problems in Spain. And in fact, it caused the fall of the government of Spain and the refusal of Spain to participate in the American invasion of Iraq. The government of Spain at that time was a PP, that's the Populist Party. It's a conservative, politically conservative party. And when that train station bombing occurred in Madrid, the PP government in Madrid, it took about 3 minutes to announce it was Basque terrorists. Nobody in Spain believed that for 2 seconds, because the Basque people who have bombed things have done the same thing for 45 years. They always leave a note, they put a radio broadcast, a TV broadcast, they tell people to get away, they're going to blow up a power station or whatever it is they do. Everything is nothing like that. It came out within a few days that it had nothing to do with anyone Basque. And right after that, there was an election, the PP government fell, the new socialists, the PSOE, the Socialist Party of Spain, was the new government, and they withdrew their support for the American invasion of Iraq, which the PP government had given. So by the Spanish government trying to pin something on Basque, it changed the entire course of Spanish internal and foreign policy. So it's very interesting, because the Basque people would probably vote PSOE, that's Socialist Party of Spain, except that party's against Basque independence. But politically, I mean economically, the Basque people generally agree. It's more, it's very much more like a Scandinavian state, you know, a mixed public-private economy with high taxes and high services to the people. So, and they support that kind of system, and so they would vote socialist, except their own party for independence is a more conservative politically party. So they vote pro-independence when they really like the other party better. It's very funny.
So they are, they do use the euro now.
Yes, they use the euro. Yeah. Yes, sir.
I wasn't to your other presentation, but did you talk about the celebration they have in Buffalo? I'd like to hear more about that.
Oh, well, that's a fantastic event. Every Basque community in the American West has a party on its patron saint day. There's some religious day that's usually linked to a particular community. In Buffalo, it's August 15th, the Ascension. And August 15th. And there's always a party. It includes dancing and food and a mass for the public and all that. And then every year there's also an American, total American, one of those. And it's someplace in a Basque town. It's been in Buffalo in 1988, 95, and last summer, 2006 is when it was in Buffalo. And if you ever are near one of those, it was in Rock Springs in 2005, the national one. And it means people come from all over the Americas. They come from Europe. It's just great to go to one of those parties. And if you're interested, there's a website, NABO, N-A-B-O, stands for North American Basque Organization. You could just put NABO in a Google search, and it would pop up, and you'd get a schedule for every town's party and the national party. And if you're a retired person who'd like to get in your Winnebago and drive from party to party, you could learn a lot about Basque history.
So it's always August 15th, regardless of the day of the week.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Was it ever in Elko?
Elko.
Yes, Elko's had the national party.
Yeah, we went to one there that I thought, I wasn't sure whether it was national or...
Yeah, but Elko has its own picnic too, has its own day of celebration. And there's another great event if you have a chance and you want to just get kind of the fun, the pleasure part of another culture, go to Boise, to a thing called Chayaldi. Or just go to Boise. There's a whole block called the Basque Block. Got a great Basque-style restaurant. It's got a Basque grocery where you can buy products from the Basque country. Basque Museum, a Hialeah court where you can watch a Hialeah match. Shall we stop? You had enough? Thank you all very much for coming. Take a book, please, if you didn't get one before.
David?
Yes?
Before you quit,
yeah.
Explain to us, since you are the state poet laureate, what that entails. I know it ruined your schedule last fall.
The state of Wyoming, like about 38 or 39 states, has an official state-appointed representative for literature. Called the poet laureate in some states and called the state poet in some states. In Wyoming, you're appointed by the governor and you serve at the pleasure of the governor. So most, well, every poet laureate to this point has served the term of the governor. When a new governor is elected, that governor appoints a new poet laureate. Okay. The poet laureate has never in the history of Wyoming had a budget to do anything for the state. But the State Arts Council has ad hoc kind of provided funds to do certain things. This year, the governor's budget recommends poet laureate office budget. Not for a salary, but to like do a thing like I could come here and teach a workshop in your public schools or, you know, something that would have to do with literature or the arts. The thing that I really like doing in the poet laureate position is I give an address to the legislature once a year. This year it's in February sometime, I can't remember when. So I go into the House. Is anybody here a senator or a representative? No? Well, it's great. I go in and I give a little blab about literature and the arts and try to talk about the role of the arts in our lives. Because you all know people talk all the time about quality of life, why people live in certain places. Why is Minneapolis popular even though it has the worst climate on earth? Why do people love the Research Triangle of North Carolina to live in? And people talk all the time, well, they like to go there because there's a great art scene. There's great restaurants. There's, you know, all these things that aren't just your work. And so this stuff is important, and if a state develops these things, you can create a nicer life for everyone and appeal to people. If you're a state that actually believes you want to have tourism, too, that draws people. So I kind of try to talk to the legislators and convince them it's not dumb to spend money on the arts. you know. Because we've had legislators, I don't know if some of you feel this way, that the role of government should not include the arts. I mean, there are people who feel pretty strongly that, I think. But I go in and try to tell them there's no reason why you can't work, especially if you think about the arts in terms of community health. Like, one of my big interests is, how do you create healthy communities? How do the arts help people to have full lives so they don't need to do damaging things to themselves? For example, in the Pinedale area, I think the arts could be helpful with the methamphetamine problem. And so I talk to them about things like that, too. That's a thing I really think is important in the job. Otherwise, there isn't a lot of work except what the poet laureate invents. If you're an active person, you'll try and do more. If not, you could just stick it on your resume.
But it ruined our meeting schedule.
That's right. Anything else?
It's been very interesting.
Thank you very much for being here. Take a look if you want.